In 1999, Quebec nurses went on strike, but after 22 days, their action was declared illegal. 10 years before, women faced even worse legal maneuvering, when striking nurses lost 1 year of seniority for every day of the illegal strike. Just last fall, 80,000 teachers throughout Quebec walked out, and again, essential services laws were cited and teachers forced back to work.
In North America, the Industrial Revolution came through women workers.
Over the next 4 weeks, we'll take up these issues here on CKUT's Long-Term Memory Radio Project, Women's Labor History in Quebec and Canada, every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m., concluding on May Day.
Women have always been essential to the labor movement. The first unions that were formed by male-skilled workers who weren't admitting those women.
Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread.
This is part two of our four-hour series on women labor history in Quebec and Canada. Last week, we talked with Lillian Robinson, the principal of Simone de Beauvoir Institute, about the emergence of industrial revolution in New England and Canada. We discussed the crucial role women have in creating this tactic like picketing, the importance of women's network in winning a strike, and discussed the early craft union. This week, we will look at the emergence of industrial unions and the role women played in organizing union and educating peer workers on the impact union could have in their lives. In this part, Micheline Dumont discussed the importance that work has always had in women's life and the different challenges and kind of discrimination they face.
During the Industrial Revolution, there was a new theory that emerged that says this is the theory about wages. So the economists and all the leader in the work have the theory that there is two kind of salary. You have the family wage for the man of the house who is supported to be enough to support the wife and the children. And women only have a supplemental pay. Mm-hmm. This is why the salary of women is always think as much more much less important, and women never earn the same amount than men.
So we were far from the equal pay, equal work.
Oh, no, it was not even possible to think about it. Mm-hmm. Because the theory said that a man has to be paid higher. That was the theory of the economic theory.
The assumption in that was that women should, that the woman's place was at home.
Yes, yes. And there was all that ideology of the two spheres. There was a sphere of economic and political responsibilities for the man, and the sphere of domestic and familial responsibility for the woman who stays at home. But in the harsh reality, many women were obliged to work. Very often they had dependent their children because they were alone. Their husband was away. He was dead. He was not there. They had no husband and they had to work for their family.
For their survival.
For their own survival, yes. So in the organization of work, many forms of discrimination about the work of women. The first discrimination that was old as humanity was occupational discrimination. Men and women never do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Men in the farm, men do some tasks, women do other tasks. It is exceptional that women and men do the same thing. Mm-hmm. On this assumption, it was more easy to pay less women. So from that discrimination came a salarial discrimination. Because women were never doing the same thing as the men, you could pay them less. Let us say in a shop, men cut coats and women cut the different parts of the garment.
I read somewhere that women actually would have been able to, but they were prevented. They were kept away from the highest paid jobs, especially
in the
garment
time,
work.
All the time. Especially in a few very high-ranking jobs, there were law that forbidden women to exert those occupations, especially in the professional field. This is why it was a long battle for women to practice medicine, law, accounting, and so forth.
Well, they couldn't. It's not only that they couldn't do it. It's that they didn't get a chance to have the education to do it.
Yes,
because
yes.
Before you practice law, you need to study law.
But
and if you can't get into the law school, there's no chance you're going to become a lawyer.
More than that, after the first woman had the capacity, the diploma, they were not allowed to practice. Mm-hmm. Here in Quebec, women were studying law, a few of them, not many, but they could not be practice law. The only thing they could do was to be legal secretary. They could not practice there, but they had the capacity, but they were forbidden to do it. And you have again another form of discrimination that in many jobs, and most of them are jobs for women, you lose your job when you get married. When you are a teacher, when you are a nurse, when you are a civil servant, when you get married, you lose your job.
It's not even that you quit, it's that they fire you.
Yes, you are not allowed to work if you get married. At the Commission des Écoles Catholiques de Montréal, in the 20th century, up to 1964, if a single man gets married, he has a rise automatically. If a woman gets married, she loses her job.
Mm-hmm.
So, certainly, this form of discrimination was a reality very important because women could not have experience because they want to get married, and after they are married, they cannot keep on or their job, so they have always a very small time of experience, so their salary is still lower and lower as the men has pile up here.
What date are we talking about here? When and
I would say between 1880 and 1960.
Up to 1960?
Yes.
But women could work.
They could work
in a school and still be married. That should have changed, no?
No, not before 1964. In the school and in the hospital.
Not until 1964 could a woman be at the same time married and work as a nurse or a teacher.
If she could work if she was a widow.
Okay.
But the idea was that you couldn't be pregnant in front of young children. It was supposed to be an abomination to be pregnant in front of young children. So, with all those forms of difference between men work and women work, when in a union women were getting in, the men in the union were not very sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had the idea, if women come into our job, the salary will go down. So there was a form of discrimination, a union discrimination. The men in the union were not very favorable to the work of women, especially not in their trade. Two of the jobs that are performed by women are school teachers for young children and nurses. And in Quebec, nuns are numerous to exist those two professions, but they don't do it for money because it is their generosity,
their
vocation, etc. So in those two fields, women do not feel it right to ask for better wages. In 1944, the Cardinal of Quebec had written a letter saying to nurses, you are not authorized to réclamer,
to demand
better wages. You see, it was very hard for nurses to organize because they thought it was unfit for them to ask for better wages.
And there was, of course, a lot of pressure, social pressure, because the Catholic religion was prevalent within Quebec at the time.
And the few who stayed in the professions, because they were not married, there were not enough of them to organize, because the young women, they were teacher, they were nurse, but they get married, so they go out. It's not anymore their preoccupation to ask for better wages, and this is why they quit so rapidly, because they had so low salaries. You see. And it was very difficult for women to accept the idea to revendicate better salaries and to organize, because it was said that it was not good for them because it was not feminine. But in some other fields, like in the industry, women were had very low conditions of work, low salaries, long hours, and so this is in this field that the union of women had a start, mm-hmm. if we can say.
Plus the sexual harassment, which was probably prevalent at the time.
It was prevalent at the time, but it was
Untalked about.
It was impossible to talk about that. You could not discuss it in the union meetings. Everybody knew it was going on, but you could not do it because for a few women who accepted that, let us say in the garment industry, they receive a command of maybe 3,000, 4,000 garment, and the boss gives the work to the worker, and he can, if he wants, he give all the work to a few of them who accept his sexual harassment and leave the other without work. It happened very often.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of bribing them.
Yes, yes, yes. And it was the same thing in the stores. In the departmental stores, ladies were selling and there were men walking in the aisles, watching those girls and punishing them, and yes, it was a very harsh place to work, to be in the stores during the 20s and the 30s.
They were watching for what? For ladies not to steal, or
no? That they were not polite enough with the clients, or they did not offer other merchandise, or they were too slow, or they took too much time to go to the bathroom, or things like that.
So they were under constant surveillance.
Yes, 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 yes.
I read somewhere that Eaton's Worker, which was one of the largest department store at the time in the 20s and 30s, tried to unionize, but it failed. Any reason that?
I couldn't say why at this particular store, but there were the idea that it is not good to have a union because the salary can go up. I think what happened at Eaton's in the other days would be similar to what is happening to McDonald's right now.
Right, it's very good comparison.
Yes.
Early in the morning, she rises. Woman's work is never done. And it's not because she doesn't try. She's fighting a battle with no one on her side. Well, she rises up in the morning and she works till we pass us. Woman better slow down. Well, she's gonna come down hard.
In the first part of this episode, we looked at the specific challenges women face in their working lives. Now, Micheline Dumont will comment on the creation of industrial union and those female leaders that have helped change the face of a workplace for women. Madeleine Parent and Léa Rodbach were very important leaders, but stay tuned to discover other women like Rose Fessota, Yvette Carpentier and Jeanne Corbin.
So we see how important the textile industry was in Quebec about the early organization of unions.
Yes, this is the place where the organization of women began. Of course, there was a strike and organization before that. The main example is the union of Allumetière de Hull, which is the matchmakers at Hull. They had a strike in the 20s, and this is one of the first union of women in Quebec. So
there was also in 1937 the Guinea.
Yes, in the garment industry. I think this strike was very important because the people were seeing for the first time the girls walking in the center of Montreal, because the garment industry is in the center of Montreal. They couldn't believe those young girls were striking, but they succeeded. Their demand was very important for them, because after the strike, their salary was quite the double it was before the strike.
Yeah, they were demanding shorter hours of work, shorter day of work.
Yes, they wanted to stop to work at noon on Saturday, because at that time they were working 6 days a week. So they wanted to stop at noon on Saturday, and they wanted to stop sooner every day. They wanted better salaries. And they wanted better sanitary
conditions
and
working conditions generally.
Yes. For the garment or the garment industry, there is very little shops everywhere. So to start a strike is very hard, because if a shop gets on strike, the boss will phone another one and he will close the shop and it will be transformed into a lockout, you see. So to organize a strike, it has to be very secret, and all the strike must begin at the same time before any boss can know anything. And they are
spies.
So the girls must be very careful not to tell this one or this one, so the boss will not know that there will be a strike. So it was very, very hard to organize. And they succeeded to organize it in 1938.
Yeah.
Madame Parent is a union leader. She is very good to organize, to convince the girls to get on strike. She was very good in the textile industry, and so she would go at the meetings and she would speak to the workers and convince them that they have to go on strike. And it was very hard because sometime the priest would say it is not good to make the strike, this is a communist strategy or things like that. So it was very hard to convince a young woman to go on strike or women who have children to go on strike because they will have no salary to feed their family. But Madeleine Parent was very good to convince the workers, male and female, to go on strike. This is why we see her in Valleyfield, we see her in La Chute, because she was an organizer. She was not a traditional textile worker. Mm-hmm. She was an intellectual who wanted to make union organizing to help to ameliorate the condition of workers.
That's also under those conditions that she met Léa Rodbach, also an yes. important woman.
Léa Rodbach was more a ground organizer. She was actually working in a shop, and she was a helper for convincing the workers. Léa Rodbach was never had never a responsibility in a union, but she was very enthusiastic for convincing the girls to go on strike.
I also have a couple of important names that are worth mentioning, I guess, because they contributed to the unionization. There's Rose Pesota, which
yes.
Came from the States. She was very successful in the States, where she helped to organize. She was part of the UIOVD.
Yes, this is the garment industry.
Okay, yeah. Union Internationale des Ouvriers du Vêtement pour Dames. There you go. And she came in 1936 in Montreal to help for the unionization of garment industry.
We have to say that many of the organizers of the unions here in Quebec came from the United States.
Mm.
Many.
Oh, there was also other few names. There's somebody that's called Yvette Charpentier.
Yvette Charpentier, yes. Yvette Charpentier, she was a worker in the garment industry. She had no education at all. I think she went to school only 1 year. But she was very good. She was a very good worker. And she was very important in the garment strike in 1938. And what she won was what they called, this was called le comité paritaire. Because when you are making dresses, mm-hmm. you are dependent on the la mode, fashion. So 1 year the fashion is like this, and next year the fashion is like that. And some year the dress is very long to make because you have many sews and you have many ribbons and you have frills and you have buttons and pockets and
are they not paid more for that?
Yes, this is what she won. Yvette Charpentier was that girl that said the price of the dress must be prepared by one worker because she knows how many time, how long it takes to make that kind of dress. So the comité paritaire was obliged to consult the workers to evaluate the price of one dress.
Oh, yeah, that's important because then
yes.
you could say, okay, a short dress is that price, but a long dress is the same price.
Yes. So the boss would always want to put the lowest price possible, and the worker wants to have the highest price possible. You have to negotiate It's not only the salary, you know, it's the price of the garment to be done. So she was the specialist of that matter, Hilaire Charpentier. And afterwards, she had a responsibility in the union, and she was so conscious of the importance of being educated that in her union, she fought to have an education committee, and she was responsible for the education committee, and they were offering courses to learn how to write, and she was very important to the development of the workers in her industry.
I took those information in a very interesting book. It's called Ces femmes qui ont bâti Montréal, and it's at Édition Remue-Ménage, La petite et la grande histoire des femmes qui ont marqué la vie de Montréal depuis 350 ans. It's in French. I don't know if it has been published in a translated version, but it's a very good book, and they talk about Yvette Carpentier, and you know what you were mentioning about this education services they were giving. I read that, and I was very surprised, because they gave, of course, courses of French, English, math, but even sociology. We're talking 40s, 50s. Yes. Sociology, workers' relation, painting, gymnastic, dance. So, you know, a great variety of courses. It's a greatest asset that she brought to those women, options of having courses.
I met her before she died, and she was a very enthusiastic woman. And she was she thought of her workers like children. She was not married and she had no children, but she thought of her workers like her children. She was like a good mama for them.
Dedicated.
But I would say that at the end of her life, she was more on the side of the boss than of the workers.
That happened.
Yes.
There was a woman that was not part of the book that you wanted to mention as well.
Yes, and there was also, we speak about Jeanne Corbin. Jeanne Corbin was born in France, but she came into Canada when she was a young child, and she came into Alberta. And when she was at a teacher's college, where she was studying, she met some people from the Communist Party, and she became a communist. And she was very good at organizing, at writing, at talking. And finally, she was called to the head office of Communist Party in Toronto in the 30s. And the Communist Party had found it very difficult to organize the workers in Montreal. So they said, we will send Jeanne Corbin. She speaks French. So she went to Montreal, and she in the 30s, and she was here for 2 or 3 years trying to organize the workers in different kind of shops, men and women. And she succeeded in publishing a communist paper in Montreal. But it was very hard work for her, and finally she couldn't stay in Montreal. Afterwards, she was sent in Abitibi, and there were strikes of the wood workers in Abitibi in Ontario, and she was organizing them there, and she was arrested and put into prison. And she was seen as a heroine of the workers in the 40s. But unfortunately, she had caught tuberculosis, and she was sent to a sanatorium where she died being very young. But Jeanne Corbin is a very nice figure of the working history in Canada.
And in Montreal.
Yes. Okay. And the historian André Lévesque has written a wonderful book about Jeanne Corbin.
Also, there was a movement in 1932 that was not big, but worth mentioning. It's called Solidarité Féminine.
Yes. It was during the Depression. There was so many poor people, and there were so many family that couldn't eat. And so they couldn't pay their rent. So this Solidarité Féminine had a few strategies to help the families. One of the strategies was that when a family was obliged to leave the rent, all the furnitures were put on the les trottoirs,
sidewalks,
and sold on the spot. So the Solidarité Féminine would come there. And they would sell the beds and the tables and the chairs and the things like that.
That's if the people didn't have enough to pay their
rent.
Yes, okay.
Yes. So people were organizing, and they were offering 5 cents, 10 cents, and so all the furnitures were sold for about $2.25, and afterwards they would give back the furnitures to the people so they could at least have their furnitures. Sometimes they wanted to have a meeting, so they had no money to pay the tramway, mm-hmm. So they would jump into the tramway and oblige the conductor to lead them at the place of the meeting where they wanted to go, or they would do sandwiches that they would give to the people who had nothing to eat, different strategies like that.
Obviously, in the crisis, there was seldom work, but it was thought at the time that women should not work except in the case of extreme necessity. And it is said that Solidarité Féminine fought to have the right of women to work and denounced the exploitation that they were a victim during the economic crisis.
The work of women was very much criticized at that time. People would falsely say that a woman who works takes the work of a man who do not work. But that was not true, because in the facts, woman and man never do the same job. And they were saying that women were working only for play money, but in reality, all the women who were working to feed their children and to support their family. So there was a lot of representation on the different governments at the federal, and one of the feminist organizations of the time, l'Alliance canadienne pour le vote des femmes du Québec, who was directed by Idola Saint-Jean, mm-hmm. many times they made representations in Ottawa to change the law and to allow all women who are obliged to work to work, and they asked for a study, a large study, to know why women are working, because they were saying we know that men 80%, maybe more, of women who are working are obliged to work. And it's not true that women take the place of a man. So they wanted a public study of that phenomenon. It was not obtained, but it was asked many times during the 30s.
Jenny's husband left her with babies on her knee. He's long gone, no money's come to feed the family. Now miners make the wages in the county she comes from. And children do get hungry, Lord, and Jenny's back is strong. She's a coal mining woman, and that's what she wants to be. She breathes that black and dusty air, wears pads upon her knees. She's proud to be a woman, and she's working to be free. To be a coal mining woman, and that's what she aims to be. Robin's learned it's hard to find a job that satisfies. A woman's need to use the strength that in her body lies. It's a rough and rocky journey from the kitchen to the mine. But strength is gained from struggle, and now Robin's doing fine. She's a coal mining woman, and that's what she wants to be.
She breathes that black and dusty air and wears pads upon her knees. She's proud to be a woman and she's working to be free. To be a coal mining woman, and that's what she aims to be. It's dark and cold and dangerous down in that dusty mine, and the fear of fire and cave-in are hard to leave behind. But the life that woman faces down in that lonely hole would be brighter now if you'd respect that woman loving the coal. She's a coal mining woman, and that's what she wants to be. She breathes that black and dusty air.
The 40s and 50s were two important decades in labor history. The World War period provided employment opportunities and in some sectors better working conditions and higher wages for women. According to historians, this period highlighted many of the successes gained by women in the workplace, but also in politics, culminating with women achieving the right to vote in Canada after World War I. But the post-war period saw public debate on the role of women in the workplace again, and women were encouraged to return to the domestic sphere.
Compare a little bit the situation of working women in Quebec with the rest of Canada. In an article that you wrote into Challenging Times, the women's movement in Canada and the United States, you cite several cases where the history of women's in Quebec has been often put aside when there's an overview of Canadian history because somehow we're different. And instead of looking into our differences, they just push it aside and say, we're not going to cover that.
Yes, yes. Very constant in many books in English Canada. Well, certainly there was differences in Quebec. Let us see the rural school teachers. Their condition of work was awful, really awful, and it was the only place it was that awful. But if a few phenomena were really characteristic of Quebec, there was also examples of women that they were really at the level of other Canadians. The nuns. Well, the nuns are supposed to be very conservative, things like that. But what we see in the 40s and in the 50s, the nuns are fighting to develop superior education for women. People in the different level of responsibility, they are afraid of women doing their baccalaureate. So they want to impose feminine baccalaureate, where you would replace chemistry by kitchen, you would teach only child psychology and things like that. So the sisters, they went at different level of government asking for the same study for women as young boys. At one of these discussions, one sister once said, we do not have to discuss if a woman has the right or not to work. This is a false question. Women work. This is the fact. And we have to adjust to that situation. And this is why we have to educate our girls so they can have the best jobs as possible. This is very unusual to think that a nun could have said that in the 50s in Quebec. So we could have other examples of women like that in Quebec who were really getting modern. Mm-hmm. We always think of Quebec as a very folk society, but in the 40s, after the war, and in the 50s, Quebec was getting more and more modern. We often say that gadgets in the kitchen that were generalized after the Second World War, like the washing machine and the frigidaire, electric stove and dryer, vacuum cleaner, mixer, and so on. Electric. So I think there is two faces to the modernization of home, of the homework. Certainly, washing machine is very helpful, and it's more, much more easy than the old-fashioned that was handled, and very, you had to carry the water and drip the water and so on.
It's less strenuous.
Yes. But at the same time, to get all those apparels needed money. So it was a reason for women to stay longer in the workplace. At the same time, too, those apparels brought new standards for cleaning, the
cleanliness.
Yes, a new standard of doing the meals for the family, etc. Certainly, it is true. It takes less time, but you have more things to do. You make a laundry every day, and the old-fashioned way you used to make a laundry once a week. You have to make a different kind of meals, and it is not a frank amelioration for the situation of women. And the problem is that you have to buy more and more and more and more things. Let's think about soap. A little square soap. But now, open your
cabinet.
In how many different forms have you your soap? You have soap for glasses, soap for the oven. You have soap for the floor. You have soap for the silk. You have soap for so many kind of soap, and it's very specialized, and it's absolutely fantastic, the sophistication of domestic work now.
So they've created a scientific mothering and scientific way of home care that somehow women felt that they had to do it a new way, a new modern scientific way.
The problem is the accent on consumption. You always have to buy more things and more. I remember maybe 20 years ago, they had this new idea, shake and bake. You bought those little boxes, shake and bake, but you had to buy it, and it is more expensive than to do it yourself.
Right, that's true.
Yes. And we have to understand that after the war in 1945, all the population had just got over it was the Depression and then the war. And so people had the feeling that they just got out on extraordinary life. You see, it was not ordinary. It was too special. It was the Depression. It was the war. And after the war, everybody wanted to come back to normality. Normality. And what was the idea of normality? The idea of normality was home, domestic life, marriage for more women, and family life for everybody. So this is not surprising that in North America, after 1945, began the feminine mystic. So this message from the radio, from the television, from the magazines, from the ad publicity, that the happiness for a woman was to live in her house with her children and all the chores that were not chores, but pleasures to do with all those gadgets that was coming in her home at the time. And in at this time, too, was the beginning of suburban houses that were out of town, far from everywhere, alone in their little streets, their little crescents. During maybe 15, 20 years, women were persuaded that happiness was only in the home. And very often they were educated and they could not express their possibility. This is what Betty Friedan called the woman problem in the United States at the beginning of the 60s, and that was felt here too in Quebec. And this is why everything was changing afterwards, and women were going back to the workplace.
Mm-hmm. And then we're getting into the 60s with the Quiet Revolution, but that's a whole different story.
Yes, that's a different story, because in the 60s, the woman movement will start over again and bring new problems to the conscience of the woman. One thing is important to understand is that women have always worked.
Thank you very much, Miss Lynn Dumont.
Nothing but a man's slave. Hard working woman. Ain't nothing but a man's slave. She worked hard all her life. And a dime she could save. Work hard like a mule down in the Georgia cotton field. Work hard like a mule down in the Georgia cotton field. You should know people now just how she feel. She better bring some bread. She come home every Friday, better bring some bread. If she don't, he will go upside her head. She's gonna leave at midnight and put that damn fool down. She's gonna leave at midnight and put that damn fool down. She's gonna find herself a working man to fill her empty crown.
That concludes part two of this four-part series on women's labor history in Quebec and Canada. We want to thank Micheline Demois for her contribution tonight, as well as CKUT's own Bianca Allard. Stay tuned for part three with Maria Peluso, who'll be speaking on women's labor organizing from the 1960s to the present.
As we go marching, marching,
in 1999, Quebec nurses went on strike, but after 22 days, their action was declared illegal. 10 years before, women faced even worse legal maneuvering, when striking nurses lost 1 year of seniority for every day of the illegal strike. Just last fall, 80,000 teachers throughout Quebec walked out, and again, essential services laws were cited and teachers forced back to work.
In North America, the Industrial Revolution came through women workers.
Over the next 4 weeks, we'll take up these issues here on CKUT's Long-Term Memory Radio Project, Women's Labor History in Quebec and Canada, every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m., concluding on May Day.
Women have always been essential to the labor movement. The first unions that were formed by male-skilled workers who weren't admitting those women.
Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses.
Which side are you on? 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 Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how a good old union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son, and I'll stick with the union till every battle's won.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for James.
Tell me, which side are you on? 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 Which side are you on?
Tell me, which side are you on?